So I'd love to, are you going?
Yes, I am.
I'd love to show you my home sensor network, and this is designed for puttering, not necessarily for anything else. But after I putter for an hour and add a new sensor, I want it to work for a year. So this is what I ended up with. I build my sensor network on a card that can be clipped out of the way. I have, you know, spring clips here, just holds it out of the way, but when I want to work on it, it just comes out. It's all open. And this is a computer that's my interface, and it talks USB to an old laptop, and the old laptop runs a web server. I had tried to put the web server right on the microcomputer. This is an Arduino with a web server board, and it's still in service. In fact, there's a thermometer on it, but it's on its way out, and this is my future. This is interesting. That's a pressure sensor. I got a light sensor here. I got a lot of analog and digital inputs. I use a lot of these digital thermometers. There's a couple that haven't been placed, but then wires go out around the house to measure the temperature in various floors. And this is monitoring the line voltage. I measure the peak voltage of the power coming in the house. I also measure the waveform, and I can see the waveform distortion that's caused by sampling power supplies. Switching power supplies only draw power out of the peak part of the power, and that flat tops the waveform. It's no longer sinusoidal. And so that's the kind of thing I like to measure. I think of it as signals coming into my house, and I sense them.
So how many of these are there?
Channels, I probably got 20 channels now, I think.
So what's this?
You know, this is the page that views them. It's just any one of these is a sensor. So like this is the sensor right out the window. If I touch that, it'll bring up a picture of it. So there's the sensor. It's just one of those little digital thermometers. I stick it out on a pipe so that it is away from the house. And you know, that was one of my first sensors, my outdoor temperature. And if I touch this number, I get a graph of recent history. So we see it's warming up outside this morning, and this is how cold it was last night, yesterday, last night, this morning. If I want to look at, say, 4 days, you know, then you can see kind of the short-term weather pattern. There it is. Yeah, wow. Yesterday was pretty warm.
Do you take action on this, or do you just collect it?
You mean like alarms or something like that?
Yeah.
Not yet. I basically look at it. And I mean, there was a time where I would always kind of check the temperature before I dressed for my commute. I commute by bicycle, and I particularly like my wet sensor. Let's take a look at, see how wet it's been here. Because we live in Oregon, it's always good to know. Somebody says something. Here, it calls rain. Rain number is zero for today.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is very close to zero. That's just picking up noise, but let's look... you know, at a two-week period. There's the two-week
rain.
So here's the noise.
Yeah.
So it says September 27th. Is that same?
Yeah, I remember that big day.
Yeah. That was, you know, that's 24 hours of wet.
Wow.
You know, how about 3 months?
Where do you store the data? Do you store
this was the dry period. What does that say? Oh, that was all summer. Mm-hmm. It was dry, and then we had a little rain, and it was dry and then rain.
Where do you store the data in database?
What I do is I have a server co-load. It's C2.com,
mm-hmm.
And it, on a cron job, every 5 minutes, talks to this server, grabs the data, and keeps it up in a colo. Just as
is it a database?
A flat file database.
Flat files.
And that way... this stuff doesn't have to keep running. That stuff's always accessible. But also, I don't expose to the public this stuff, but I expose to the public my aggregated data.
Have you found the tiny? Is this an Arduino?
It's called the Keensy, and it's Arduino-like. It's made by a guy in Sherwood, and it's.
Now, would there be any reason to take all that and box it up in some kind of an official sensor thing?
Yeah, like if I were ever finished, I would do that. But you know, as soon as I put it in a box and put in the screws, I'll stop working on it. So I make it accessible so that I can play. Let's see, we might try some playing. Here's a little thing. This is just a model airplane motor. And I think I can work this. I thought I had... I'm not seeing the wires where this... This was meant to plug in here at some point, so I'd have to hook up two wires, and that's probably too much to do in the video. But
and that would spin?
Yeah.
Based on,
I have a web set up here. Let's see if I can happen to have it in my short-term memory here. Well, let's try a new page, and... So that's Textime Remote, and the password is guest, G-U-E-S-T, can spell guest.
You know somebody's serious when they've got oscilloscopes,
yeah,
police scanners, and motherboards spread around. You probably have a lot of IP addresses per square foot.
Probably. So this is talking to this computer right here,
mm-hmm.
and this I can pick any pin and set it to 0 or 1, or all the analog input channels. I can just say acquire an input channel, and so that acquired the signal. If I touch it, it reacquires it. This just to have for demo purposes, you can see this red wire. It goes over this AM radio, just a nice audio source, and I feed that in. Over here, a little battery there that just sets it up to be in the range of 0 to 5. And if I want the FFT of that, I just select that.
How important do you think it is for today's programmers to know this kind of stuff? Because it seems like no one, unless you're an EE major, no one seems to care about this anymore.
You know, I don't know if it's too important, but if you get to, you know, if you're running a server farm and you're keeping the servers running and whatever, you know, you're going to be dealing with this kind of stuff. I don't run a server farm in my house, but keeping this stuff running...
Sensors.
It just reminds me how to think about software that's running 24/7. Mm. And so it's a way that I can fill my brain with little techniques, things for debugging. And then when I'm working with our engineers at work that keep the server farm going, I have as much insight as they do, only theirs is in their particular environment and mine's in my environment. But it's a way, I think of it as filling my mind with patterns, and if this breaks for 3 days, it doesn't matter. You know, if our server farm goes down for 3 days, it's a big deal. So there's no anxiety here, but I do, I struggle to get 2 9s here.
But I think that's very interesting. I didn't think about it that way. I thought you were just tinkering, but you're running an appliance.
Yes.
And keeping it running 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And maintaining it takes time.
So here's what I want to show you. There's a little slider here. And what's cool is if this were hooked up properly, this would zip back and forth.
Based on the slider.
Yeah. So that shows that I do have a two-way connectivity here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I had to do a password, because if it's two-way, I want to make sure who's coming in is me.
As a software person, do you think that is it sad for people to not know how to do this stuff? To pull out a breadboard and poke around?
I guess, you know, I feel a little... Let's just say I am happy to help anybody who has an interest stroke this kind of interest. I think what's really sad is when you work all day and you're burned out and your work has driven the curiosity out of you. If you come home and want to get on and do something up in the cloud just for the heck of it with your family, that's tinkering in the same sense, where you get to do things that you wouldn't do in the controlled environment of work. In work, you don't want to do things that are risky. You want to be conservative. But you want to be in an environment where you can say, Oh, the worst thing that could happen is the whole thing would blow up. Big deal, you know, no risk. So, you know, that kind of environment. In fact, one of my problems is this thing kind of sprawled out over my desk with lots of little boards. I found that I was afraid to work on it for fear of jarring a wire loose.
Mm-hmm.
And then all
suddenly
of a sudden,
it's not fun.
Yeah, so all of a sudden I have risk. And so, you know, one thing I did is I've now separated it so I can replicate this easy, so it'll never get much more complicated than this. And also by gluing the boards down, which is, you know, I can put this out of the way and so forth. It's just, you know, by making it a factor of four more robust, which is to say not very robust, but a factor of four of what I had before, I've returned to my comfortable tinkering environment. And that's that comfortable tinkering, I think, is what's important. You know, just being at one with your tools, whether it's electronic tools or your debugger or development environment or knowing how to, like, wield the power of the cloud or something like that, just getting to the point where you know that stuff is what's important. Know it so that you can wield it, and then you wield it, and every time you wield it, some little thing will happen, and you'll learn one more thing, and a year from now, you'll be in some crisis situation, and something will happen, you'll say, I've been there before, and you'll just know what to do, because you debugged it in a relaxing environment. So that's how I defend doing this. I also enjoy doing it. There's a degree to which, you know, I spent 10 years working for Tektronix, and I like measuring things. So I make stuff that needs to be measured, and then I measure it, and I think about the measurement, and I tune the measurement, and it's, you know, just stroking my past, remembering things I learned 25 years ago, and I just like to remember that I learned them. So there's a little bit of memory lane here going on, too.
Mm-hmm. And how many different kinds of things can you measure?
I have, in my network, I have light and sound and atmospheric pressure. A friend of mine gave me this pressure gauge. He said he'd had it laying around the house. He was going to make an electronic turbocharger for his sports car, and he never got that project done. And he said, well, it's never going to happen. Here's a pressure gauge. It's meant to measure from 0 to 4 atmospheres. That's a pretty good range of pressure. And I hooked it up, and I said, well, let me see if I can measure the barometric pressure. And that, you know, is pretty much 1 atmosphere, you know, plus or minus a little. So what I end up with is a measurement problem. Can I take a sensor of a very broad range and measure a very weak signal? And, of course, I do that by using the computer. I do lots of samples, and I average and stuff like that. I had to calibrate it. So, you know, I read the pressure from the weather service, which is probably the Portland airport, mm-hmm. and I collect the data in a flat file for a month, and then I compare my sensor to the Weather Bureau, put it in a spreadsheet, get the trend line, you know, it gives me mm-hmm. slope-intercept equation, and I put that in my calibration, and I'm done. But I was just, you know, after moving it around a month ago, I noticed that it had shifted. I moved it off of this computer into this computer, and the A to D converter is a little different. So I just happened to be recalibrating it.
Hmm.
And I noticed that there are some unusual properties of the data from the Weather Bureau, like some numbers are twice as likely as other numbers over a long period of time. Why would that be? Why? It's like even numbers more popular than odd numbers. But it's not quite that. It's like every third value that they'll quote is twice as likely as the other two.
Hmm. You think they have a bug?
I think that they have a sensor that is quantized, and then they're reading that value in, changing it to some other units. Like maybe it's inches of water, and they're converting it to millimeters of mercury or something like that. Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and that's causing something that's bucketized to be put into different buckets, and it just falls into buckets in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what's cool is with my little thing, because I'm comparing my sensor to their sensor, it just spreads it out in a picture where I can see the processing that they're doing at the Weather Service. you know, right here from my basement. Same thing when I watch the power line. I'm measuring the shape, like here.
So you're watching the power that comes into your house. You're looking at the voltage.
So this was just looking at, but here on channel 4, if I pick that, oops, channel 5, let's get channel 4. That is the AC power, and if you look at that, that's not quite a sine wave. The top and the bottom are flat.
They're a little flat.
Yeah, and that flattening is because there's a rush of current into every computer power supply everywhere. You know, my neighbors, down the street, whatever. And that rush of current is as that waveform reaches its peak, and that just, you know, this is kind of a brownout for a few milliseconds or microseconds, whatever. It's probably 100 microseconds of brownout every cycle, 60 times, 120 times a second.
Mm.
And I can see that. It's not much of a brownout, a few percent.
Yeah.
And I've been measuring that by comparing the so-called RMS voltage. The you know, you take every sample and do the square root of the sum of the squares, and then that gives you the power in the whole waveform. And then I compare that to the implied RMS of the peak, and that gives me a percentage of how much that's drooping. That's another sensor channel here. And that's, go back a few. That's called.
Sounds like you're discovering a lot of stuff that you just wouldn't have seen. You have a sixth sense here, or 26
sensors. I think of it in photography, you talk about seeing. And that's when you're going to go out and take a picture, and you just stop and you look around and you try to see pictures before you take them. And a good exercise is to go someplace where you don't think there's any pictures and then just look and look and look until you see one. So I'm doing the same thing while I'm doing it with computers. I'm seeing what's going on. Now here's, this is on the range of 96 to 100. So it's always running around 97 to 98%. That means that this, the top of this waveform is 98% of what you would expect it to be.
Oh.
It's less than 100. And it varies with time of day. I also have some kind of noise. You can see just the statistics. You know, I have kind of uniform noise, but then there's also noise that causes it to jump up. And that's because I'm comparing a peak power to an average power, and the average is looking at the whole waveform. But when I look for the peak, I just look for a peak, and that makes that peak detector is extra sensitive to noise, because it only takes one little bit of noise and bad luck, and boom, it's sending the peak up way too high. So it's easy to see the frequency distribution, so I can look at that and kind of tell what's going on. It also makes me think, gosh, I wonder if I could eliminate that noise. There's a noise that I've sort of identified a couple kinds of noise. So other stuff is just measurement noise or, you know, whatever. So for me, what I like is to take a dirty signal, a signal that has lots of different attributes, and then kind of tease it apart by using computer programming. I'm a computer programmer. I apply computer programming to my sensor network. One of my favorite sensors is out the window there is that little patch of a terry cloth. That's old, you know, there's two brass rods that hold that out there, and when it rains, it gets wet and it conducts electricity better. So I'm actually measuring the rain in some sense, but I'm also measuring how fast it dries, and how fast it dries depends upon whether it's warm or cold, or whether it's windy or not. So I'm sensing lots of different signals, but they're all signals that kind of come together in a way that tells me whether it's wet or dry outside. You know, there's some sense where I don't care whether it rained an inch or 3 inches. You know, if it's going to be wet, I want to wear bicycle clothes to keep me dry. And so it's a dirty signal compared to what you might get in a home weather station. But when I watch it, I get to see those various effects. I can see in the winter when it rains, the signal goes up, and it can take a day to dry out. In the summer, when it rains, the signal goes up, and it can take a few hours to dry out. So I can see that it dries faster in the summer than the winter.
Wow.
Is that important? Probably not. Yeah. But, you know, it's like me out there with a camera trying to see something to take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
My camera is a computer.
So you've made this all generic with inputs and outputs and the graphs, and you've got all these different kinds of measurements that are coming in, being displayed. You know, it's just, it's X, Y over time.
Yes.
This is all external things like pressure and weather and humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you measure anything about yourself? Because myself as a diabetic, I care about weight. I care about caloric intake, I care about blood pressure, I care about blood sugar.
Yes.
I know that you recently lost, well, maybe recently, a while back, lost some weight. Do you measure the outside world and the inside world?
You know, I would like to do that, but I like the idea that I can get regular measurements even without paying attention. You know, so I weigh myself periodically, but I don't bother to enter it because it's not automatic.
Mm.
This is all automatic. And being automatic means that I can neglect it for a month, come back and look, and see what's developed over a month.
There's a device you might be interested in called a Fitbit.
Yeah?
It is a little clip that you put in your pocket, and it's a wireless pedometer.
Yes.
And it measures your base metabolic rate and whether or not you're sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And it does it completely wirelessly, and it uploads the data to a web server.
I'm looking forward to the world where that's...
Yeah, and you just put it on yourself, and you don't think about it. And I didn't think about it for a week, although... And I literally would just clip it to my belt, slept with it, walked with it, told me how much I slept, told me I was waking up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. If it's not automatic...
That's right.
Then
you could sustain it for a week, but then you'll forget about it.
Exactly.
So what's fun to look at something is, like, how has it changed in the last 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is this year different than last year? And that I think is where you know, any of this stuff starts to become interesting, even if it's just about you. I have, you know, some of these things have checksums in that, and I just plot the checksum error rates.
Right.
You know, that's kind of a introspective. It's the sensor network looking at itself. And I thought, well, maybe I could correlate the sensor network with the AC, the error rate with the AC line voltage or noise on it. And that turned out to not work. But then I rewired it with different wire, and it just, all my checksum errors went away.
Hmm.
So I've lost interest in checksum errors.
I see.
But I am interested in what we can know about ourselves. I like to bicycle. I'd love to have something that recorded power output in every ride. And if I could just check.
Yeah.
Every day going to work, you know, how many different ways have I ridden to work? But I don't have the sensor yet. I know that they're beginning to make that kind of stuff, but I'm also kind of cheap.
There's an article I told you about, the Netduino, which is the .NET version of the Arduino. I'll send you a link. There's a guy that at Microsoft that made a homemade bicycle computer with one of these, and I think he knows the sensors you need to plug into your wheels.
Mm-hmm.
You could measure a lot of things.
I have bicycle rollers, and I instrumented that with an Arduino.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have a readout.
That would give you peak power?
Well, what it does is I read out five different values, and I got this nice supply of little meters. And these are all cheap. These cost like a quarter a piece because they're all broken, but it's just the scale that's broken, and it's like fuel efficiency or something.
Yeah.
But I built a system, and I just stacked these up, one on top of another, all with their own scale.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is I programmed it to kind of show me not only how fast I'm going, about how long I'm going. It has a little clock, which is just kind of my workout schedule. And it has it measures the variability of my speed, which on the bicycle rollers, you can kind of punch the wheels, and then you'll have variability in speed. And what you want to do is train yourself to pedal in smooth circles. And so I had that. I called it the roundness. And if I got up to 100%, then it was perfectly uniform. And as I started punching, the roundness of my pedaling would drop. And then I just had the stack of meters watching. I think I was watching five different things at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know where it ended up. I like to build stuff with foam core. You can see a lot of foam core around here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I can get an X-Acto knife and a hot melt gun, and I got a custom chassis mint.
Yeah, you've got a lot of things here that are
instantly
breadboards attached to foam core.
Yeah, and that's a good methodology.
Is a camera over there?
Yeah, this is a little. This is two model airplane motors hooked together, so that gives me a 360 degree, 180 degree coverage. Although the way it works, you know, it's not always right side up, but then on the computer I just write it.
Uh-huh.
You know,
how do you know? And you know which way it is because
because I'm commanding the motors. I know what I've done with it.
Do you have a helmet?
I think this. If we just plug this in.
You know those cameras that bicycle people put on their heads now?
Yeah.
It's like this is a whole thing. People record their bike rides just in case something interesting happens.
There's a variety of kinds of USB.
Have you ever thought about
this for a moment?
You ever thought about dropping out of industry and teaching school?
Teaching middle school? I have a friend who does that.
Middle schoolers would.
There he goes. Oops.
Oh, so what's it doing?
So this is scanning the horizon.
You're kidding.
And see, it's always pointing to the horizon, and it goes all the way around, and it does it without photographing itself, and it does it without winding up the cord. It's going in complete circles.
I was noticing it's trying very hard not to do, I mean, I'm expecting it to hit the bottom, knock itself. It's not doing that. So what's it looking for?
You know what I have a program on here that will take that picture, and whatever it does, it paints it as a paintbrush across the screen and makes a 360-degree view of the room.
Wow.
Which it refreshes every time this comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a dynamic paintbrush, and of course in the paintbrush is the computation that figures out how to write the video image.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan was to put this in the center of the conference room table so that anybody could look at a snapshot, you know, a JPEG that was a recent photograph of mm-hmm. everybody sitting around the table.
Very cool. That's so much fun. Well, thanks for showing me all of this. You really appreciate it.
Now, because I've unplugged this Arduino, I think when I plug it back in, this is my annoyance with this, is I think it comes up in the wrong mode and it won't be a web server. But if I type the right incantation here, it will reset itself.